We're continuing the story of the seven betlers, the 13th story in Sipuri Maisius of Rabbi Nachman's famous stories. We spoke so far, the first section of the story dealt with a king who was giving over the kingdom to his son during his lifetime. We completed that part of the story, and then Rabbeinu Zal started to tell about a certain place where people were forced to flee. And they ran into a forest, and in the forest there were these two children that got lost, and they were stranded without food or anything. And Rabbeinu Zal went on to say how they met these betlers. A betler means a beggar. It also, the word betler also means one who pleads. And they met seven different betlers. Each one seemed to have a different defect. One was blind, one was deaf, one was mute, and each one of them provided them with bread for a period of time, and then as they were leaving, the children begged if they could go with them, and they said, no, we can't take you with us, and they left, and they gave them a blessing. Each one of these betlers gave a bracha to these children, I bless you that you should be like me. It seems as if I have a defect, but it's not really a defect. Then, after they met these seven betlers, then they were still lacking bread. They still needed bread. They traveled, they went to a yishuv, to a settlement, and they followed a certain path, which led them to a certain village, and they went into a house and begged for food, and they were given bread, and went to another house, and they saw that this is a way that they can survive. And they made a pact between them, these two children, this boy and girl that were lost in the forest together, they made a pact that they're going to stick together. And they made for themselves these sacks that the betlers used to have those days for bread, you know, large sacks to gather bread. And they would go to parties anytime there was a celebration, a circumcision, a bris, a wedding, a bar mitzvah. They would go because usually in those places, number one, there's a lot of food. And there's leftover food, so they could join the meal, and they could even take home some stuff afterwards, have stuff for afterwards. And then they went to another city, different places, and they became known among the betlers. The beggars, the older beggars, all knew about these two children who had originally been lost in the forest, and now they're betlers also, even though they're so young. And this is where we pick up from where we left off in the previous year. One time, there was a very large fair that was going to take place in a large city, and the betlers went there, and these children, these two children, the boy and the girl, also went there. And when the betlers saw them, they came up with an idea, wouldn't it be great if these two children were to marry each other, if the boy were to marry the girl? And as soon as the betlers started discussing this, they all agreed that this is a good idea, and they consummated the shidduch. The question is, how do we make a wedding? How do betlers, beggars, who barely have bread and the most basic things to eat, how do they make a wedding? They thought it over, and they came up with an idea that they knew that on a particular day, the kings is going to be celebrating a birthday, and he makes a large party to celebrate. All the betlers will go there, and they'll all ask for food. They'll be given food, they'll be given meat, they'll be given bread, and they'll take that food and put it aside for the wedding. And in addition, when the meal is over, okay, that's what they decided. They went to the wedding, and sure enough, they asked for bread and meat. And in addition, they also gathered up the leftovers of the meal, took it with them, and they left. And they went ahead and they dug a very large ditch, which could hold 100 people. They can't rent out a wedding hall or anything, they can't afford that. So they went into the forest, they dug out a huge ditch, and they covered it with reeds and dirt, and manure, you know, put on a very temporary roof. And they all the betlers gathered in this ditch to celebrate the wedding of these two children. And sure enough, they brought them, they married them, there was a chuppah, a canopy, and all of them were very, very happy there. And the bride and groom were also very happy. Note in the earlier part of the story, where we spoke about the king that was giving over the kingdom to his son during his lifetime, Rabbeinu Zal emphasized that there was a tremendous celebration. The whole country was happy and the king was very happy. Tremendous joy. Here also in this story, which seems to be different, also there's tremendous emphasis on the joy and happiness. At this wedding celebration, this couple started to remember the tremendous kindness that Hashem had done for them when they were in the forest. These two little kids were stranded in a forest alone. They had nobody to talk to. They can't talk to the birds or the trees or the animals. And Hashem took care of them. Hashem sent them messengers, each one of these betlers who provided for them, one after another, until the time came for them to leave the forest, and they realized how the tremendous kindness of Hashem. And they were crying about this, in a sense, tears of joy, tears of tremendous deep feelings of a connection to Hashem. And they had a tremendous yearning, if only that first betler who met us in the forest, the blind betler who brought us bread, imagine if only he could join us for our wedding at this time, to see us getting married, to share in our joy and happiness. But before we continue, we mentioned a very important point. We mentioned that at their wedding, they started to remember the great kindness that Hashem had done for them earlier. The Zohar HaKadosh says that this is a very, very special custom for Jews, that whenever a Jew is celebrating a happy occasion, a very critical piece of it is to take the opportunity to remember all kind. Number one, to realize that this happy occasion is a gift from Hashem, whatever it is, whether I'm celebrating a wedding, whether I'm celebrating the completion of a certain course of study, a siyum, whatever it is, to make sure to give credit to Hashem, to acknowledge, to thank Hashem for His tremendous kindness in this particular, in what I'm celebrating here now, and to use it also as an opportunity to remind oneself of other great acts of kindness that Hashem did for them, and to verbalize it, to say in public, in front of people, the people that are, they're all gathering for this celebration. And the celebration can take on one of two forms. Either it's a celebration limited to people. I'm celebrating the fact that I accomplished this and this thing. I reached the age of 13 years old. I'm getting married. I had a child. I completed a certain course. I won a certain tournament. Whatever it is, I'm celebrating something. And the celebration could be limited to I, my, me, and my friends. But if a person wants to take it to a completely different level and realize and remember that we are all in this world, we mentioned this before and I reiterate it, we are all in this world to serve Hashem. The final mission in Pirkei Avos says, Kol ma shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo lo'i bora elo lichvoidoi. Everything that Hashem created in this world, He created only for His honor. So that when a situation like this comes up, where a person is being honored, they're being honored at a dinner, a special dinner, they're being honored at their wedding, they're being honored at a celebration of their children, a person can make the mistake and keep that honor for themselves. It's my celebration. I paid for the hall. I raised this child. I. A person can leave it at that, or a person can open their eyes a little bit further and remember, I nothing. I didn't create myself. I didn't come here by myself. There's a Hashem who created me. And whatever I have is from Hashem. And whatever cause I have to celebrate, the most important character in the celebration, I want to make sure to direct all the credit where the credit is due first, which is, I want to thank Hashem for giving me the privilege, for giving me my life, for giving me my wife, for giving me my child, for giving me the opportunity to complete this great thing, whatever the person completed. And when a person does that, that respect and recognition that's being given to Hashem, that opens up whole new channels of blessings for the person and all those that are present. Because they're fulfilling the purpose of creation, which was for Hashem, the king of the world, to be given the honor, glory, and respect. So we said that was the first thing they did, these children did. They remembered the great kindness that Hashem had done for them when they were in the forest. And it's interesting to note, we're gonna mention this throughout the story, that one of the most important days in the Jewish calendar, Rosh Hashanah, the new year, when we celebrate the new year, the beginning of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, each one of the holidays has a different title. We know that Pesach is called Zman Cheruseinu, the holiday of our freedom, when we gained freedom from slavery in Egypt. Shavuos, Zman Matan Toraseinu, we celebrate the fact that Hashem gave us the Torah. Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Hazikoron Hazeh, the day of remembering. Because this concept of Zikoron Dikdusha, a Jew being able to remember what we're supposed to remember where I come from, to remember who really deserves all the credit, this is so, so important that this most important holiday of all is called Yom HaZikoron, Rosh Hashanah. And we'll speak about this more as we continue. And they had tremendous yearning, if only this first Betler that we met in the forest, if only he could join us in our celebration. And as soon as they started feeling this deep yearning for him, as soon as they started really, really wanting him to appear, suddenly the blind Betler spoke up and said, I'm here. I've come to you to be with you for your wedding, and now I'm not going to give you what I gave you before. Before I gave you a bracha, a blessing. Now I'm going to give you an actual gift, a wedding gift, that you should be as old as I am. Because earlier, when I met you in the forest, this was a bracha that I gave you. I gave you a blessing that you should be like me. But now, I'm giving it to you as an actual gift, a complete gift. In Yiddish, the term is drosha geschenk. That's an expression that's used for a wedding gift. One of the reasons being that it was a custom at a Jewish wedding that the groom would say a drosha. He would speak. He would speak words of Torah. So that the gift that was given as a payment for his speech. This was a joke, sort of, in a sense. It was actually a wedding gift, but they called it drosha geschenk. And here the Betler said that now I'm giving this to you as a complete gift, a drosha geschenk, that you should live a long life like me. You think that I'm blind, he said to them. I'm not blind at all. It's just that everything that's going on in this physical world, in the world of materialism, all the time that passes in this world is meaningless to me. It's nothing to me. And that's why, in other words, we know that a person, one of the ways that time is measured is the blinking of the eye. We know that a normal human being, the eye blinks so many times per minute, per hour, etc. When we want to say that something happened very quickly, the thing went by in a second, went by in a flash, we say it was like the blink of an eye. That's how quick it happened. The Betler said to them that the whole life in this materialistic world, to me, isn't even like a blink of an eye. It's nothing. It has no meaning at all. And that's why it seems as if I'm blind because my eyes are closed to the physical world, to the materialistic world, to the nonsense that goes on. But really? And he said that I'm not interested in looking at whatsoever. That was one important point that he made regarding his ability not to have any interest in materialism, not to have any interest in the foolishness of this world, and therefore he closes his eyes to it and seems to be blind. And he said, in addition, I am very old and I'm still very young and I haven't even started to live. Even though I'm very, very old. These two statements seem to be a contradiction, but this Bettler said them both. I'm very old and I'm very young. I haven't even started to live yet. And I'm not the only one saying this about myself, but rather I have an approbation from the great eagle. And I'll tell you a story where you'll see how old I really am. These are the words of this blind beggar, and now he begins to tell his story, through which he's going to prove how old he really is. One time, there were people traveling in many ships at sea, and there was a major storm that broke out, and all the ships broke apart. And the people were rescued. The people were saved, and they came to a very large tower, and they went up in this tower, and they found food and drinks and clothing, everything that they needed was there. They had all the pleasures of the world. And while they were sitting there, they spoke up and said, "Let each one that's here tell over a story, an ancient story that goes as far back as you can remember. Let's see how far back each one of us can remember, and each one will tell a story of something that far back. From when your memory first began, your earliest memories." And there were elderly people there at this gathering, and there were young people. So they decided to give respect first to the elders, to have them tell their story first. So one of them spoke up and said, "What should I tell you? I remember as far back as when they cut the apple from the branch of the tree. That's how far back I remember." And all of them that were there heard what he said, didn't understand what he meant at all. However, there were some very wise people there that heard this, and they said, "Wow, that's a very, very old story. That's a very ancient story." Then they went on to invite the next oldest person to speak, to tell his story, what he remembers. So the second one, who seemed to be younger than the first one, he seemed younger, he said, "That's an ancient story? I remember that. I remember when the apple came off the branch. But I remember much further back. I remember when the candle was burning." And again, the wise men that were there spoke up and said, "Wow, that story goes way, way back, much further back than what the first one said." And it was incredible to them that this person who appeared younger than the first elder, and yet he was able to tell a story that went much further back. Then they invited the third one to speak, and he was again younger, and he said, "I remember when the fruit was first starting to form, when it was first starting to take shape and form." So they all said, "Wow, that goes further back." Then the fourth one, who was still younger, said, "I remember when they were taking the seed to plant the fruit." Then the fifth one, who's still younger, says, I remember when the wise people were thinking about producing the seed. Then the sixth one said, I remember the taste of the fruit even before the taste went into the fruit. The seventh one said, I remember the smell of the fruit even before that went into the fruit. And the eighth one spoke up and said, I remember the shape and form of the fruit before it entered into the fruit also, before it came into physical being. These eight people, each one presented their case for a story that goes further back and further back and further back. And now this Bettler, who's telling the story at the wedding, says, and I was the youngest one there. I was a small child. And I spoke up and I said, I remember all of your stories. I remember all of these things. And I remember nothing. I remember when there was nothing at all. So they all said, they all agreed, that goes further back than everybody. And this was incredible to them, that the youngest one, this child, was able to remember further back than all of these people who seemed much, much older than him. Suddenly, a great eagle appeared and approached this tower and cried out to them, stop being paupers. Return to your treasures and use your treasures. This is what the eagle said to this assemblage there. And now the eagle said, all of you, come out of the tower in order of your age. The oldest one first, and then so on and so forth. And the eagle led all of them out of the tower. The first one to go out was me, the Bettler said, the youngest one, because really I was older than all of them. He remembered much further back than all of them. And so too this procession, the next youngest one went out after him, and the next youngest, and as they went out in seemingly reverse order, those who seemed older were the ones who were going out last. So the Bettler said, so now the great eagle said to all of them, I will interpret for you what each one of these eight people were saying. The first one, who said he remembers when they cut the apple off the branch of the tree, what he was referring to was he remembers as far back as when they cut the umbilical cord that attached him to his mother. The apple is the fruit, the produce, symbolizing the child. I remember when I was cut from my mother at the time of birth. The second one said, I remember when the candle was burning, meaning I remember when I was still in my mother's womb. The Gemara tells us that while a child is in the mother's womb, there's an angel that teaches that child all the Torah that child has the potential of learning. Everything. And the Gemara uses this symbolism of the candle burning, implying that the child is given a light, able to see from one end of the world to the other. The third one who said, I remember when the fruit was first being formed, meaning he remembered when the embryo, when the physical shape and form was first starting to take shape. The next one who said, I remember when they were bringing the seed to plant the fruit, meaning I remember when I was first conceived, when my father and mother first conceived me, when the seed was first generated. The next one who said, I remember the wise people who produced the seed, meaning I remember at the stage, the time, when the seed was still in the brain. We know that the Torah tells us that when a child is born, the seed that produces the child originates in the thought, in the mind of the father. And it travels from the brain, it travels down to the body, taking on physical shape and form, until it comes, it's produced in the form of a zera that will generate the child. So this one said, I remember when the seed was still in the mind. The next one who said, I remember the taste of the fruit before it even entered into the fruit, is referring now, the next three are going to be referring to the three spiritual portions of a child. Till now we were talking about the body, the formation of the body. We spoke about when the child came out, separated from the umbilical cord. We spoke about the seed, the different stages of formation of the body and the seed. Now, this one who said, I remember the taste, meaning, I remember before there was any body, before there was any seed. I remember when there was only a nefesh. Nefesh refers to the lowest spiritual level of a person. The next one who said, I remember the smell, that refers to the ruach, the spirit. That's a still higher spiritual level. And the third one of those three, who said, I remember the shape and form that this child was going to take on before it took on any physical being, was referring to the neshama. That he remembered when this child was still in a state of neshama, the highest spiritual state possible, the closest thing possible to Hashem. The neshama is the closest spiritual thing to Hashem. Below that we have ruach, below that we have nefesh, and then further and further down, taking on physical shape and form. And then the eagle went on to say that this Betler, this child that was there at the time, who said, I remember nothing, was referring to what came before nefesh, ruach, neshama. In other words, even higher than that. I remember when I was part of the infinite light of Hashem. Before it went down, before it became any kind of individual kind of light, even taking on the form of a neshama. I remember prior to that. And now the eagle, this is all the eagle speaking now. The eagle is the one who gave this interpretation. And now the eagle said to all of these people, return to your ships, meaning return to your bodies that were broken, and now they're going to be restored and rebuilt. Now you can return to them. And the eagle blessed all of them. And to me, this blind Betler said to me, this great eagle said, you come with me, because you're just like me. You're very old, and yet you're very young. You haven't even begun to live yet. And even though you're very old, still you're able to retain your youthfulness, to be so young. And I, the eagle said, I'm also just like that. I'm very old, and I'm very young. So the Betler said, you see that I have this haskama, I have this approbation from the great eagle, that I live a very long life. And now, he said to this couple, I'm giving this to you as a gift, as a wedding gift, that you should be just like me. You should be zeichet to live this long life just like me. When he finished, there was a tremendous, tremendous celebration. Everybody there was elated, very, very happy. This concludes the first day. We know that the Jewish custom is that after a wedding, there's Sheva Brachos. There are 7 days of celebration. This Betler had appeared on the first day at the wedding, we can start the procedure. We can have the first Sheva Brochas. This Betler appeared there. And the second Betler is going to appear on the second day of the Sheva Brochas and give them his wedding gift and tell his story. Each one of these Betlers is going to do this continuing throughout this period of the Sheva Brochas. Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Nazal himself did not give a commentary on this. And this story, I believe we mentioned it, might have mentioned it before, but it pays to repeat. One of the greatest rabbis who lived a few hundred years ago, the Chidushei Horim, he was known as, the first Rebbe of the Chassidei Gur, who was known as a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He wrote Sforim that are respected worldwide, that are studied in the yeshivas. The Chidushei Horim was once at a bris, he was invited to a bris milah, and the circumcision was delayed. It was on Jewish time. And it's known among Chassidei Gur that they're usually very punctual. So whatever time the bris was called for, the rabbi was there. And he saw that it's going to take time. So he told his attendant, go over to the Sforim Shafa, take out a sefer, whatever sefer it is, and bring it here. He wanted to have something to study. He wasn't going to stand around and just simple talk. So the attendant went over to the shelf. He puts his hand to take a sefer, and he sees Sipurei Maaseis, stories. And he thought, oh no, I'm going to bring this to the rabbi. He's going to say, I didn't ask for a comic book. I asked for a sefer. So he was thinking, on one hand, maybe he should take a different one. But then he remembered that his Rebbe told him, take whatever sefer comes to your hands first. So he figured he's not going to deviate. He brought it over. The Chidushei Horim took it, and as was his custom, he put one foot up on a bench, standing, put the sefer on his lap, and he starts zipping through it. Page one, two, three, and he was a quick reader, and an incredible sharp mind, and he's reading and reading, going through all the stories. It seemed that there was a delay maybe of an hour or something like that, and when he finished the sefer, he closed it. And he said to the people there, he showed them up to here, up to this story, the first 12 stories, I understood a little bit. This story, I don't understand anything. This is what the Chidushei Horim said. He was not privileged to have the Likutei Halachos, the Sforim that we have, the commentaries that are given to us by Rav Nosson Zal, Rabbi Nachman's main student, Rav Nachman Chirinzal, one of Rav Nosson's main students, and other rabbis afterwards, who filled in a little bit, who gave us a little bit, that's a lot. The little bit of insights and explanations that they've given us give tremendous, tremendous light, shed tremendous light on what's taking place here. And we'll try to give over as much as we can in this shiur, and we'll continue in the following shiur. We know that the mitzvah of tefillin is considered to be one of the most important mitzvahs in the Torah. The three mitzvahs in the Torah are referred to as bris, the covenant between the Jewish people and Hashem. The tefillin are referred to as ois, v'hoyo l'ois al yodcha, a special sign of the covenant, the deep, deep relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Then we have the bris milah, which is the circumcision, which is also called ois. And we have Shabbos, which is, these three are considered among the most important items in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism. The tefillin that we wear a box on our head and a box on our hands. And the Torah says, "V'hoyo lo'ois al yodcho," it'll be an ois. An ois means a sign, like we said, of this special covenant with Hashem. U'lezikoroin b'ineinecho, and as a remembrance between your eyes. These words, u'lezikoroin b'ineinecho, are the connection, or the bridge that we see in this story. We see the Betler, who was the Betler of the eyes, the one who seemed to be lacking in eyes. He seemed blind. He appeared blind because he had the ability not to look, not to be taken in by the foolishness of this world, by the diversions of this world. He was able to close his eyes and be able to see past this world. We know that people who want to experience something spiritual, usually, when a person is praying or studying, or when they really want to feel something spiritual, usually there's a natural tendency to close one's eyes. A person closes their eyes when they're singing a song that has some very deep meaning, or any kind of spirituality. A person would say, why? What does that mean? Rabbi Nazal explains in Likutei Moran, chapter 65, that when a person has their eyes open in this world, in the physical world, and they're looking around them, their vision is limited to the physical world. Even in the physical world, let's say a normal human eye can see, let's say, a few miles. On a clear day, you can see out into the ocean, literally a few miles out into the ocean, you could see a large ship out there. But if that, let's say a person could see, for example, 5 miles, 8 miles out into the ocean. But if there's a ship that's 12 miles out there, that's further out there, you wouldn't be able to see it if your eyes were open regular. When a person wants to increase their vision, they want to be able to see further, what do? We squint. We narrow the opening of the eye, and that gives us the ability to see a little further. Something that when we had our eyes fully open, we couldn't see. A person's looking at the blackboard, certain case, person whose vision, you know, and something they can't see that well, and they squint, they narrow the opening of the eye, and suddenly they can see further than before. And Rabbi Nazar says this is actually true, that the more you narrow the opening of the eye, the more it can reach out further. Rabbi Nazar goes on to say, what if a person wants to see out of this world? A person wants to take their vision and be able to see into the next world, into Olam Haba, into the future. Then the person needs to close their eyes completely to the physical world, to the materialistic world. And if a person does that, they can transport themselves to a higher place, to a spiritual place, which is a much higher level. When would a person want to do this? Rabbi Nazal explains there that we know that in this physical world, there's good and there's bad. There's pleasure and there's pain. The Torah teaches us that in the future world, Bayom Hahu, in the future, it's going to be all good. Yihya Hashem Echod, Ushmo Echod, Hashem is going to be one, there's going to be only oneness, only good, only pleasure, no pain. Now the question is, if a person who is in this physical world and is about to experience pain, they're sitting in a dentist chair, and the dentist says, you have a very serious cavity here, in order to repair this, I'm going to have to drill, and it's going to hurt. So I'm giving you a warning, prepare yourself to be able to handle the pain. We know that one of the natural reactions of a person when they're told that is they close their eyes, not just close their eyes, but they close their eyes very tightly shut to prepare them to be able to handle that pain. Rabbi Nazar says, why? Why has Hashem put it into the nature of a human being to do that? The reason is because by closing your eyes regular, you're blocking out the physical world and you're taking yourself to a higher place, to a spiritual place. When you close your eyes very tightly shut, you're transporting yourself completely into that place where there's no pain, where it's all good, that spiritual world, that spiritual place. Now, if a person's going to say, but 1 second, I did it, I was in the dentist chair, I did close my eyes right there, it still hurt. The answer is, but this is the reaction of the body to try to minimize the pain. Unfortunately, because most of us are so attached to this physical world, because of the fact that we're always looking around and seeing and attaching ourselves to things around us in the physical and materialistic world, by us, even when we close our eyes, they're still very open. So we can still experience some pain, etc., etc. But the higher a level a person is on spiritually, the more a person advances. So that even when their eyes are open, when they're walking in the street, they know to choose what they look at and what they avoid looking at. That if something is not of benefit to me, if something is not going to help me spiritually, if it's not going to help my soul, if it's not going to help my ultimate future, why bother looking at it? Even if in the physical, materialistic world, this item is called attractive, where typical human beings are attracted to look at this, whether it's a beautiful woman, whether it's an extraordinary beautiful car, whatever it is, something that draws people's attention, a person who's looking for more, a person who has their eye to the future, they know that life in this world is temporary. And every move I make in this world is going to define my existence in the future world. And the less in this world, less is more. The less I partake from this world, not just eating, but even seeing, the less I allow my eyes to gaze at all the distractions in this world, all the things that would distract me from my ultimate goal, which is coming close to Hashem, which is doing for my ultimate future, preparing for my long, long journey in the world where it's really long, the less I look here, the clearer a vision I have, the better I have the ability to look forward and to look backwards. The story tells us about these people who were able to remember further back. We know the Gemara gives us examples of some of the great tzaddikim who, when they wanted to show what their greatness was, one of the ways that they were able to describe the greatness was how far back they could remember. Because again, the more a person loads up the cameras in their eyes, taking in the physical material world, the physical world takes up space. Physical things take up space. And there's only so much space. In physical material, there's only so much space. So the more a person loads their brain and their eyes taking in the physical material world, the less they have the ability to go further, to go forward, looking into the spiritual world, or to go further back, to be able to remember further back to earlier and earlier stages in their life when they were pure. We know when a child is born into this world, a child is born pure, without any sin, without any blemishes. The longer a person lives in this world, the more they have a chance to accumulate either good things. The great tzaddikim accumulate, they amass tremendous spiritual wealth, and unfortunately other people amass other things. Here in the story, we're being shown that the zikaron b'nei necha, the ability to remember, just like in the tefillin, we're told that the tefillin shorosh, the tefillin that's worn on the head, is worn, it's positioned right between the eyes, and the tefillin represents moichin. It represents a very, very high level of spiritual knowledge and light. A Jew putting on the tefillin in the morning means they're drawing upon themselves. These are pipes. Each one of the boxes of the tefillin, each one of the cubicles, is a way through which Hashem is projecting light, spiritual light, into the person. That's dependent on the b'nei necha, on the degree that a person keeps their eyes pure, avoiding looking and dwelling, especially dwelling, on things that a person would want to avoid looking at in this world, things that can distract a person from their ultimate goal of serving Hashem and following the path of the Torah. We know that the Torah tells us that if a person is walking and they happen to see something, and it's something that could damage their soul, they see a woman who's dressed immodestly, or they see other things that could bring bad thoughts into their minds, if the second the person realizes what they're looking at and that it's something improper, they take their eyes off it, it does not harm the person. It doesn't damage the person. If a person allows themselves a second look, or if a person allows their eyes to dwell on the thing, even after they realize that, hey, a red light went off, that this is not kosher, this is not good, this is something, it's a woman who's dressed improperly, or it's something that I shouldn't be looking at. I'm looking at something that somebody else has, which could arouse feelings of envy in me, or things like that. Why dwell on it? What? I have my own. Why look at somebody else's? So if a person takes their eyes off immediately, then there's no harm or very, very little harm that's done. If the person, chas v'shalom, allows themselves to dwell on it, that's where the major could cause major, major damage to the person's soul. The Zohar HaKadosh tells us that the seven openings to the head, the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, and the mouth, are referred to as the windows of the soul. Whatever they take in, whatever the eyes receive, whatever the ears hear, whatever a person smells, whatever a person takes into their mouth or gives up, those have major, major effect on the soul of the person, the neshama of the person. In the story here, we spoke about eight elders who presented their story, each one going further and further back. These eight correspond to the eight parshiyos that we have in the tefillin. We know that our tefillin have basically four chapters in the Torah. Kadesh li kol b'chor, v'hoyo ki v'yacha, Shema, and v'hoyo im Shamoa. Those are the four parshiyos. In the tefillin shel Rosh, they appear in four separate cubicles. In the tefillin shel Yad, they appear in one large cubicle, all attached. Rav Nosson Zal shows in the Likutei Halachos how these eight elders who spoke up, each one telling a story further back, correspond to these eight sections of the tefillin, which when a Jew is zeicha, every single morning we put on the tefillin, we're renewing ourselves, we're deriving a whole new influx of light, of holiness, of zikorin diktusha, the ability to remember what we need to remember, what we would want to remember, via these eight sections, eight portions of the tefillin. In Yitz Hashem, in the next year, we'll continue filling in pieces, as much as we can for now, of the details of the story and how they relate to each one of our lives. One of the most important factors here that's mentioned is the fact that this betler was able to say, I'm very old and I'm very young. There's a pasuk in Tehillim where the pasuk says, Hashem says, Beni ato, you are my son, Ani hayom yiladeticha, I have given birth to you today. Rabbi Nachman, at his bar mitzvah, said that he had an uncle, one of his uncles, who was a grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, who took him aside, and he told him this pasuk. And he said that this stayed with him for his entire life. His uncle was emphasizing to him that today you're being born. Bar mitzvah is like a whole new birth, a new person, a brand new person. And from this point on, every day of your life, because until now, you weren't obligated to fulfill the mitzvahs. You weren't obligated to put on tefillin, to put on tzitzis. Now that you're starting your commitment to mitzvahs, one of the most important things you're going to need to know for your mitzvahs to be effective is that if you do a mitzvah as if it's the second time you're doing it, it's not special. Something new, a new talis, we make a bracha shechion. When a person buys a new garment, the first time you put on a garment, we say shechionu. This is giving me life. New gives life. Old is lacking in life. When we see a person generally, when we see older people, we say, wow, the person's, it's as if they were dead. They're not doing anything. They can't move, they can't walk, they can't eat, they can't... Chas v'shalom. The point that's being emphasized in this story, this betler said, I'm very, very old, and at the same time, I'm young, meaning every day, even though I'm doing a mitzvah for the thousandth time, I do it like it's the first time. Every time I walk into the house, person walks into the house, no reason for any celebration. What? I'm coming home. What's the big deal? Person walks into the house like it's the first time. I just got a new apartment. I'm moving into a new house and I'm coming into it for the first time. That special feeling, that high, that's one of the most important ingredients in serving Hashem and in being able to live a long life. This Betler said that he had Chaim Aruchim. Long life. When we see a person who's, we see sometimes teenagers who are like old ladies or old men already. Why? They've lost the joy and happiness. They're not enjoying anything. It's not new to them. They've done this, everything they've done already. I did this, did that. So there's no excitement in it anymore for me. And it's as if they're going to school. Chas Shalom doesn't excite. What? Another day. Another day. They can't wait for it to finish. Can't wait for it to be over. That's one attitude in life. And the other attitude, when a person approaches everything as if it's the first time, it's new to me, a newborn baby. The Torah describes, defines a Baal Tshuva and a convert. The Gemara says, Ger shenizgayer kikoton shenoy ladomi. When a person converts, they're considered like a newborn baby. And this is where the Torah tells us, B'mokim shebalei tshuva imdim, Ein tzadikim gemurim yecholam lamed sham. That there's a certain advantage that a Baal Tshuva has, that a convert has, that to them it's new. Everything is new to them. A person who's born religious and born, it's old. My Yiddishkeit is not, my father, my grandfather, they're all doing it. So chas v'shalom, a person could be misled into feeling like this is my old heritage. Versus the attitude that this is every day, it's brand new. My approach to my connection to Hashem, to my connection with my family, everything I'm doing it like it's the first time. A person that way is living a long life, meaning every day counts. The other way, person can't wait for the day to be over. When a person's attitude about life is, can't wait for this to be over, can't wait for this to be over, then their days don't count. The day is nothing. The person himself said the day is garbage. Why? Because I can't wait to get rid of it. I can't wait to be 13. I can't wait to be married. Or I can't wait to get over this. That getting over it, then it's worthless. The person is showing that they don't respect it at all. The other way, where a person, every day is a new beginning, they're living life to the fullest. Their life is called Arichus Yamim, long life.